The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it is Friday. So you know what happens now. It's the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. What is happening, man? Listen, people thought I'd never get over my obsession with Phil Collins. But take a look at me now. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I like Duff's musical punchlines lately. Phil Collins there. I love it. Thanks to Duff. I love the laughs every single Friday. Nobody tells a joke like Duff. Thank goodness for that. We appreciate him for doing it for us every week without fail. Actually, Guns N' Roses have announced a few tour dates. There's one at a festival in Napa Valley. So hopefully more to come. It's good to see bands getting out there again. And it's good to see the Winnipeggers getting out there again, even though it's an online show. Get your laugh every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook page and YouTube channel. And if you missed us live last night for Truth or Farce Part 2, you can catch the show on demand right now. Rybo, Spiwi, and I had a great time as always. And we thank all of you who tuned in last night. We'll be back with a new episode next Thursday, but go check out the live show right now. Just go to my Facebook page and YouTube channel at 9 p.m. Eastern. We got a lot of guests. We tell a lot of stories. You have to decide if they're real or farce, truth or bullshit. We've got guests. We've got models. We've got a special guest host. We got rants. We got raves. We got a couple drinky winkies. If you like laughs, and who doesn't, then the Winnipeggers are for you. All right, today, got some laughs with the debut of the Gun Club here on Talk is Jericho. Austin and Colton Gunn, sons of the legendary Billy Gunn, are both at AEW and in a tag team, sometimes with their dad, sometimes on their own. We'll hear their stories about how they got into AEW, how each had a different road. Austin's the younger brother, but he's been wrestling longer. He spent some time with Ring of Honor and on the indie scene before AEW started. Colton came to wrestling later in his life. He's a natural, though. He explains what he was doing before and why he decided to join his dad and brother in AEW. They talk about the role that Big Billy played in their training and development. They also talk about growing up around wrestling in the WWE where their dad was performing. They're part of D-Generation X, of course, badass Billy Gunn. Austin is also a rapper, and he's a good one, too. He just released a new EP called All Alone. You'll hear how he got started in music and what it took to record and release his brand new EP. Let's go now with Austin and Colton Gunn, the Gun Club, right here on Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so a few months ago, I had kind of an open call when the pandemic first hit. If anyone wants to do Talk is Jericho, come ask me. And Austin Gunn asked me.
Yes, I did.
I promptly ignored him for,
for 5 months.
5 months or so, but the time has come, and here you are, Austin and Colton, the Gun Club. You actually have a name now.
Yes, we do. We're established as the Gun Club.
We are established as a Gun Club.
I'll say this.
I don't know if established
maybe
is
established as a name. The name is established.
It's fancy.
We're established.
Okay. I'll take that.
All right.
But first and foremost, though, I think one of the things that we've been doing when the lockdown started was having kind of our own guys in the crowd at the, you know, at the ringside.
Yeah.
And I said at one point, give the freaking Guns a bonus. Like, you guys have been so great at, I mean, obviously, too, especially you, Austin, because you're much more of a character.
Yes.
Just going over the top, screaming and yelling and all that sort of stuff. Like, you really took it seriously, which you might not notice, but I noticed. Yeah. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I think that one night that you actually returned the favor after months and months of doing it, because we started in Atlanta doing that.
Right.
And I was injured at the time because I got injured in my debut, and I had nothing to really look forward to, that the kind of wrestler's mentality of, like, oh, feeling bad for yourself. But then when we got the opportunity, I was like, Dad, do you just want to go out there and just like yell for the boys, yell for the girls and the guys just performing in the ring? And I was like, we'd be really good at that. We're goofy. We could at least get some FaceTime, me and you. And that's exactly what we did. And we just took it to the max, 110%. And we wanted to be the loudest ones out there just so fans at home were just like, shut up. Like, shut up. Like, but
we needed it, though, because there was no real reactions. But at least we were getting some kind of emotion from your guys' side, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know what it's like to be in there when there's zero sound. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to at least just, like, just help them out in some regard. And then Colton started coming to the shows, and then Colton started wrestling. And then we were out there, all three of us together, and it was just so much fun. I mean, you're at AEW. You're watching the best wrestlers in the world, and you have a front row seat. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
So. But you're with your dad, too.
Yeah.
Like, I think how cool that must be for you guys.
It's awesome. Just, that's a crazy experience all in itself, right. Just being with your dad. And I, like you said, with the crowd, I came a little later, so I didn't realize the extent of what he was doing in the crowd. So the first night we're standing out, I'm like, dang, you're loud. Like, yeah. I've always known you're loud, but then it gets you into it and everyone else, and I think it helps the product overall.
Yeah, just trying to keep the energy out there, and for 2 straight hours, and then after those 2 hours, my voice is dead. My head is just numb. Like, I just have
it's hard to do.
It's very hard. I heard somebody say, like, I was like, oh, we need to go out there right now. Okay, just give me 5 minutes. And he's like, well, all you have to do is cheer.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second. I was like, you don't know what it's like. I am screaming at the top of my lungs like I'm on a roller coaster for 2 hours trying to do chants and get everybody going and keep people alive. And it's just like one of those things that you don't realize how hard it is until you try it. And then Colton was like, I'm exhausted, dude. Yeah, I was like, you're only 5 minutes. That was the opening of the show. You got so much.
Wait, we have more than one match.
That's what Luther was saying. He was on the heel side, and he's like, you remember in the summertime when it was like 100 degrees out there? He's like, dude, it's so hot out here, and I still have to have a match on dark, but I've been cheering the whole time. It's hard to do. Yeah. And you think about that, because even when I went out there and go watch, even just a couple chants here and there, and it's like, man, this is to be, and also to be on camera. You know, you have to be you're setting the tone for the crowd that are watching at home.
Absolutely. And you have to think about their experience of what they're experiencing at home. It's like they were just watching the wrestling, which is phenomenal. But then what's the sign, the sound that has to go behind that? Like, what would they do in our situation? And just, I guess now it's just natural. It's we're just having a blast watching our favorite characters and booing the ones we don't like. And it's just a cool thing to do with your family at the end of it. I mean, it's just me, Dad, and Colton hanging out out there now. So it's just,
was it always the plan for you guys to be a team, to be the Gun Club?
I don't think so. I wanted to kind of do my own thing when I started wrestling. I have 3 years of experience on top of Colton. So when I started, and I right out of the gate of college, I was just like, get me in the ring. Yeah. I want to do this. I want to be an entertainer. And I picked it up really quick, but I know what it's like to watch other second generations that have come before me and have the hate of just, oh, you got this free ride, you got this rare opportunity. Yeah, we have a rare opportunity, but it's if you take it seriously. So I was like, you know what if I just go do my own thing? So I went to developmental in Baltimore for ROH for 6 months. And I just fell into a... But I don't think I was mentally strong enough to be on my own.
How old are you?
I'm 26 now.
Okay.
Yeah, so when I first started, I was just not mentally tough to be on my own yet, living in a hotel for 6 months. So I kind of fell into a weird little depression state. And I called Dad one day and I was like, I'm packing my bags. I don't care what the future holds for me, but I'm not okay here. I need to come home. So I packed up at like 3 a.m. I went by the hotel desk and I was like, check me out of room 303. I'm coming home right now.
He knows the room number.
Yeah, room. Yeah, it was terrible, but I knew I wasn't on the right track. Where I was didn't feel like home to me. So I talked to Cody one-on-one. I didn't want anybody else than me. I was like, if you give me one shot, just give me one debut match and I'll prove why I need to be here. And after that, it's just the rest is history. And then me and Dad teamed up and just... I knew I wanted to be with Dad. Dad's not going to wrestle forever, so I knew I wanted that experience at least one time, just to be in the ring with him one time. And that's what that debut match was, but fortunately I got signed here, and now we're just off to the races, and then Colton.
Yeah, but how would you, Colton, because you just came here a couple months ago.
Right.
Because I saw you around for a bit. You're kind of more of a quiet guy, so it's like... Oh,
as you can tell,
you'll get your chance. I'm good. I can tell.
Austin, good.
But it's funny, dude, because I mean, it's the typical thing. Like, I remember probably saw you guys a couple times when you were just little guys, 20 years ago now, believe it or not. But At first, don't know which one is which. And then it's like, okay, well, Austin's involved. Is Colton in this too? And now you are, like we said, in the business wrestling. Was this always the plan for you as well?
So it's weird because I am the older brother. And usually, you know, the younger one follows the older one. But in this instance, it's backwards. So it's a little weird. But I always had, I don't know if I lacked the confidence or was just like telling myself excuses, a little more scared to get into this realm of wrestling.
Yeah.
I would always be like, well, what if I get hurt or what if I'm not entertaining enough? Cause I'm not as loud and outgoing as Austin. Like that's just the way it is. And that's the way it always will be.
So, brothers, right? Yeah.
Different and I understand that. So I would always tell myself, and I think there were more excuses like, oh, I can't do this. I'm going to get hurt. But just something kept telling me, and I moved to LA. I lived there for about 3 years and I was building $1 million houses. I was working out with Mike O'Hearn and I had like a pretty good life. And just something in the back of my head just kept saying like, oh, me and Austin could do this or me and Dad and Austin could do this. And I'm like doing promos on my way to the job site. And it's just like, okay, I'm thinking about this way too much. And it just kept building. And one day I called Rikishi actually because he has a school out in LA. I didn't tell anybody I was going. I just went by myself. I went out there. I was like, let me just roll around the ring or whatever. And I did that. And I called Dad after and I told him, he's like, well, why didn't you tell me kind of at the beginning? But then I explained it.
You wanted to do it on your own kind of, right? Yeah. Like you did Austin. Yeah.
And I told him not to tell anybody who I was when I was there.
Hard to tell.
Yeah, exactly. That took all of 10 seconds. But, so I called Dad, told him, I was like, I think I do want to give this a shot. So I flew home for 2 weeks. I wrestled around with Austin at Flatbacks at, in Orlando's
Spears and Breeze. I tell Breeze. Yeah.
Yep. So I did that and I went back to LA. I packed all my stuff, quit my job, and I drove back to Orlando and started wrestling school in August of 2020.
Which wrestling school was that?
This Flatbacks.
Flatback. Okay. Yes. So they went over there.
Yep.
August of 2020.
Yes.
So when was your first match?
November.
I remember watching it actually with Cody or Tony or something. And it was like, how many matches this guy had? And so I think it's his first one.
Yeah, this was it.
Really? Yeah. Like that's real. Like it's funny because you guys, you both look like your dad, but you don't look alike. You do, but not really.
Right.
And you're kind of like the athleticism you both have, but you have a little bit more Colton and the personality. Austin's definitely got that. You're like two halves of Billy Gunn.
Yeah, we call ourselves like the yin and yang.
Right.
Yeah, it's a beautiful combination, but it's
No, it is. So what, how are you feeling? Because once again, you know, my first match was in the Pinocchio Moose Hall in front of 40 people in Northern Canada, but you're on the main stage in AEW, you know, there wasn't people there, but doesn't matter. Still some of the biggest names in the world are here.
Yeah, I can't even, like, I know the opportunity that I'm afforded and I don't take that for granted, you know, but it was surreal. I don't know. It was just, it was crazy. Like I went to wrestling school, then I'm on AEW with my dad and brother in the ring. And it just, I can't explain the feeling when I was in that ring for the first time and just like the zone I got into and the feeling. Mm-hmm. It was just like, okay, I'm supposed to be here.
It kind of just like all led up to this moment. Cause we always talked about being the tag team champs when we were wrestling upstairs as kids on our double mattress and just driving my mom insane. Cause she thought we were going to hurt each other. And then it finally was just like, whoa, we're in the ring right now doing this for real. And he's worked so hard at Flatbacks and it's just amazing to see him train in the morning, then go straight to class. Then he would come over here just to show face at AEW in Jacksonville, then drive all the way to Orlando the next morning to make it there on time for training. So he's been busting his butt. But then we were in the ring and the match ended and I look over at Dad and he's like tearing up. And I was like, what are you doing, dude? Big baby. Like, but it was actually just a cool moment just to celebrate together. Finally, we were just all where we needed to be.
I can see that as a father, and my son has no interest in wrestling right now. And maybe he will at some point, but to be in the ring with my son or for you guys to be in the ring with your dad, like I had my dad in AEW. Gosh, wait, when we first started is kind of like my special guest under the box. Like there's always a bad guy under the giant box was actually my dad. Hey! But it was a real cool experience. So for you guys to be able to share that with your dad must have been something that's very special.
Mm-hmm. And something you'll never forget.
Never forget, right?
Never forget.
How many people can say that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's one thing that drove me to come back, not knowing the future that was ahead of me. I just knew I wanted to at least have that moment with Dad.
Right.
Maybe it was down the road or maybe it happened right away. But yeah, just thinking about that moment. And then when got the idea or the little wrestling itch. It was just like, wait, we might have something here. This might be a really cool thing.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So when you guys, because it's funny, because there's two separate sides here. Like you said, you trained and then went right to AEW. You had a little bit more experience in going to Ring of Honor for that 6 months. Mm-hmm. Had you done indies, et cetera, before that?
I did. I did a couple indies under Dad's protection, kind of. I would go to the shows with him, and then I would team up with someone who either who I've trained with in the past, or just once I got more experience, I could hold my own and kind of go to the local indies by myself and stuff. So I did that for about a year, I think, and had a couple indies under my belt. And then Bubba actually called me and was really interested in me going to the tryout camp in ROH. And he helped me a lot and just kind of just watched me through the whole camp. And I was busting my butt there. And then I finally got signed to the developmental deal there. So I thought I was set. And I was like, you know what? I can finally do this without Dad and be away from his protection and kind of hold my own and make my own kind of
I remember that because you were here for a bit and then you got that deal to go there.
Yeah, and then when you guys came, you guys came to Baltimore, I would come see Dad and see you guys and show face and be like, just checking in and wanted to be there and experience, just at least just go to a show and watch it as a fan. Mm-hmm. And then when you guys left the next day, I was like, this is kind of like whatever. And then I was just not happy. Just
were
at the
working
end of the
their RH shows, or what is it? What is the development?
I was in
ROH
the top prospect tournament, so I was doing stuff with them, and then I was doing training every week and like two times a week, and then I was just like, just something in my heart was just like, this isn't it.
Yeah,
like just follow your gut, and I did follow my gut, and I came home without any promises or anything, and I just sat at home for about a week, and then I was like, Dad called Cody. I just want to talk to him really quick. And Cody was awesome and just said, hey, you know what? Why don't we just set you up for a debut show at the anniversary in Daly's Place? So this is actually where I made my debut. Mm. And on the last move, the Frog Splash, I felt my PCL pop.
Oh, no.
And I stood up and I was like, oh, no. Because I worked so hard to get to that debut match. And then
who did you
like,
work with in your debut?
It was 10 from a Dark Order and Sean Spears.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a dark dark. Yeah, it was a dark dark.
Oh, wow.
So it was before the dark. So it was the opening match, and I looked back, and Dad was already through the tunnel, and I was like, I went through the tunnel, and just the fans embraced both of us, and I was like, this is exactly what I pictured in my head. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hopefully I can keep this going, and I was fortunate enough to get the opportunity.
How many matches have you had now, Colton?
12?
12 matches? So you're usually working most darks now, but just with your brother?
Yes.
Your dad's not involved as much, right?
We've worked together, just me and him, probably 4 times, something like that. Me and my dad have worked together once, and then all the rest has been triples with us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, trios. Gotcha.
I think just as a group, we're trying to find ourselves at the same time and establish ourselves just moveset-wise and characters and what we do. What does the Gun Club do, and what are they made of, and who are they? Because Dad's already established. Dad knows his stuff.
Well, he's also not here to wrestle every week either. I mean, he comes in and does what we need him to do. But
yeah, exactly.
The idea is for you guys to kind of move forward, I would think, right?
Yeah. Like and we just made our debut at that pay-per-view and the tag team Royal Rumble.
Oh, yeah.
And that was cool, Rumble, too, just going out there with him. And I just remember not even remembering the entrance because I was just thinking about him behind me. And I was like, thinking about this is a pay-per-view. And I was like, this is just nuts. It's all coming together and it's just... just wild. Just wild to really think about.
Were you guys big fans when you were kids?
We weren't allowed to watch it, really.
Really? Because you know, the Attitude Era was going on, and my dad's on TV telling
good
people
to suck it.
So, like, my mom, if he had a match, she would kind of let us watch it a little bit, but we weren't sitting there watching the 2-hour Raw, and, you know,
I always feel, it's like now we're trying to catch up to all the matches that everybody always talks about and the angles and stuff, because sometimes we're in conversations with these hardcore wrestling fans, which we all are. And sometimes I look over at him, I'm like, what match are they talking about? talking about? Like, we don't know because we weren't allowed to be exposed to it that much because we were only allowed to watch dad's matches. Then we had to go back home or go back to bed because we had school in the morning.
But I did, so. Like I said, I did see you guys around at some of the shows. At least you actually must
we
have
used
been
to go to the shows a lot. Actually, he took us on the road. Yeah, quite a bit, especially when we were on summer break for school. Mm-hmm. We always used to go and
getting memories and stuff of messing around in the ring.
Oh, all the time. I remember Vince.
We would get kicked out all the time. Vince would kick us out all the time. Yeah. All the time.
I actually have a vivid memory of me and Austin in the ring, and they started playing everyone's music. And they all started running to the ring, and like me and Austin are just like cleaning the house. We're like 8 years old.
8 years old giving a great comeback. Knocking them down, showing fire, getting on the top, doing the suck it or whatever. Just nuts.
What's your other memory? You said you had two.
Oh, Dustin Rose, actually, you know how like that swing?
Giant swing?
Yes, yeah. He did that to me when I was young, and I just, for some reason, still remember it because it sucks so bad.
Oh, it's
like,
terrible.
I'm so dizzy. And I just like remember, I'm like, that was so mean. I don't know why I cannot
Cesaro,
forget
that. I used to work with Cesaro quite a bit. Whenever he would do that, I said, dude, you got to stop at about 6 or 7. Yeah. I know you can do 40. Please do if we're ever on TV, but at the house show in Poughkeepsie on a Sunday afternoon, I'm seriously going to throw up. So can we just limit it to 6? I'll tap out in the air if I can.
Yeah, please. Please stop.
How about you? You got some memories from when?
I just remember always being afraid of The Undertaker and Kane. I was just so little at that time, and I didn't understand the concept of wrestling. I just knew that we were at Dad's work, and we got to beat up The Rock and Stone Cold, and I was more interested in that and seeing them because they're larger-than-life personalities and so welcoming. And then whenever Undertaker the King came around the corner, I would just start crying and hide behind my mom. And later in life, they're just the nicest people ever. But I remember being in the ring. I remember wrestling. I think my first wrestling spot was with AJ Styles. Did a hurricanrana around the body like 5 times because I was so small. But it was just like remembering those little things are what's
WWE?
Important to me. No, that was when Dad was in TNA.
Oh, gotcha.
But yeah, later on when I started like really understanding the business, then I was like, AJ, please like take me through this. And it was just, we have all those little memories that most people can't say they've had. And it's just, those are what we keep close to our heart for real.
Did you guys, I know for me, like my dad played pro hockey in the NHL for 10 years. And when I was a kid, I thought, it's just my dad. It's whatever. Mm-hmm. And then when I hit a certain age, I realized just how effing cool it was.
Yes.
And my son's 17 and a half. And the other day he was just saying like, man, I never realized how much cool stuff you did. Did you guys, when you were growing up, was it just your dad? Do you realize now how cool it was? Your dad was part of so many important parts in history. But when you were kids, was it just, my dad's just a plumber or a wrestler or whatever he is?
Yeah. I think when you're a child, it's just normal. Like you don't know anything else.
Yeah, he's your dad.
So he's your dad. Yeah, he's on TV and beats people up, but that's just what he does, And you don't understand until you get older, the sacrifices that you guys, including you, have made for your family. You're traveling 300 days out of the year.
Right.
You're taking brutal beatings to your body, but it's to make your family have a better life. And you don't understand that as much when you're a kid. You just think, you're gone 300 days out of the year. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, that's what dad does. That's cool. It's normal. But then
do you remember him being gone a long time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's just when you want to look up in the stands and see him at your games, at least when you're like going through lacrosse or when I was football or him basketball. It's just like, why isn't dad here? Oh, because he's on the road again. Like, it's just you obviously we've gone through our highs. We've gone through our lows. And now it's where we really just like appreciate it. At the end of the road, this is the grand finale. And like, we know he's not going to wrestle forever, but like we can live in the moment now and just appreciate the whole story is just beautiful at the end. So
do you guys go back and watch any of his old stuff?
Oh, now it's neat. That's what I was saying. Like now we watch everything. Like, we watch old school matches, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels. I like to watch Mr. Perfect because I love the way he sells. And obviously in our trio, I'm the one that always has to sell because I'm the smallest. But I just love and appreciate the little things that dad points out sometimes in older footage and older matches. And then we obviously go back and watch him.
Yeah. It's not just because you're youngest, though. It's also you have more experience.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like Colton selling right now is might not be as good as you selling until he gets a little more of a...
And I appreciate the art of it. I think I like just convincing people that I'm really in trouble. Mm-hmm. Like, I really... I really like the art of selling rather than giving a comeback. And
I think I've asked him like three times, like, do you want me to sell tonight?
I'll take it for the team again. It's weird too, though, because
I know you like it.
Okay. I'm just realizing that you've never had a match. Well, now we have people in the crowd. Like the pay-per-view, there was.
That's my first match in front of people. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how was that dynamic?
That was, I don't even know if I heard, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It was before going out, I was like, I'm about to debut in front of people on a pay-per-view for AEW. Like,
it was our biggest crowd yet, too.
Yeah, and I don't know.
It was 1,400 people, which 2 years ago would be like, that's not, man, whatever. But now it's like, oh my gosh, 1,400 people, yes.
And when dad's not there, it's kind of forcing me to grow up really, really quick as a ring general when I'm in there with him. Right. So when we have duos, just me and him out there, it's like now I catch glimpses of me stepping kind of in my dad's shoes in a sense of like, all right, relax, here we go. This is the next thing, here we go. But I was in the pay-per-view, I had Peter Avalon in the corner and I was like, Colton, move! And I appreciate that, just like kind of realizing that, like just guiding him in a little bit, and because he is my older brother, so it's a weird dynamic, like we said, but it's cool to like work on those little things for myself and just be like, all right, Colton, here we go, all right, move here, do this.
Yeah, and that's very hard for me.
I was
sometimes
just gonna say,
yeah,
it's very hard that he has to tell you what to do.
Yeah, because like sometimes at class or when we're training, he'll say something, I just want to be like, shut up.
He did that the first two weeks, and I went, oh, okay, you want to do it this way? All right, well, you have to fail. I guess
finally get your chance to tell your older brother what to do.
Yeah,
right?
Finally, after 26 years, I get to go, you know what?
Yeah. Well, how much older are you, Colton?
3.5 years.
Okay, so when you guys grew up, then you were like way older, basically, right? 3.5 years.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not way older, but 3.5 is a little
when you're in high school, you know, when you're 15, yes. Your brother's, you know, 11 and a half, that might as well be 100 years at that point.
But the crazy
in time.
Thing is he never left my side. Like, I know never. We're insane, like very close, and people think it's crazy when, like, we've only had two real fights in our whole life.
Wow.
That's it. Like, and he's always gone everywhere with me and always hung out with my friends and did it. So it's like we are apart and the school, like 15 and 11 and a half is, but I just don't see that way because he's always just.
Yeah. Talented. Most older
and
brothers.
And my mom makes me take him everywhere.
Yeah. Most older brother. It was at the same time. It was either mom forced him to take me places, but at the same time, older brothers don't usually like their younger brothers hanging out with him and his friends and stuff, but he was really good about it growing up. So.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk about a little bit more about, I'm interested about the Ring of Honor thing, because so when you were there for 6 months, was this pre-pandemic?
This is pre-pandemic, yeah.
So how often were you working? Because living in Baltimore, like you said, like that's kind of the base of Ring of Honor.
Yeah, so I didn't know anybody going in. So I thought in the back of my mind, I was like, you know what? I'm strong enough. I'll work out by myself.
Did you get the chance in the first place?
Bubba. Oh, okay, Bubba gotcha. Called me and called my dad and asked if I was interested in going to the 2-week tryout. And I was like, absolutely. I bit at it right away because I was supposed to go to New Japan to their dojo in Japan.
I heard about that.
But things fell in the wrong places. But I ended up going to Ring of Honor. And I was living in a hotel by myself. And I didn't have the mental strength to work out every day. And I wasn't on that discipline regimen that I am on now, fortunately. So I just fell into a weird state of mind. And I was only going to practice twice a week, but I moved there to practice and to get that extra help and to be that hands-on every single day, but I just wasn't.
Who was leading those practices?
Mercury was, usually, because he was good friends with my dad, and he was leading the classes at the time, and I don't know if it was something in me that wasn't ready to be there or if it was the developmental program, because they were very new at the time. I don't know what
it
was.
They had the developmental
program. Yeah, I don't know what it was. It was just I was going there twice a week, and I didn't even want to show up. I didn't want to work out. And that's when I knew. I was like, wait, I don't even want to wrestle today. What's going on mentally or physically, like in my head? And then, yeah, my sleep schedule got backed up. So I was like sleeping all day and then waking up right before practice and then struggling it through practice. And then I'll go home and stay up and watch movies and play video games all day. And I was just like, this isn't it. This isn't it for me. This isn't it for Austin Gunn. Like, this doesn't feel like home. It doesn't feel like I enjoy doing what I want to love to do. So, yeah, I just packed up my bags and headed home.
Now, but for you, Colton, you mentioned that you train with Rikishi a bit. What was that like? Because Rikishi's a great guy. I don't know him as a trainer.
Yeah, he's awesome. I only went one time.
Oh, okay.
I only went one time just because I know Rikishi taught my dad a bunch because they used to work as like the Smoking Guns and way back. Yeah. And he taught my dad a bunch and he said he's an excellent trainer. But he was like, if you're going to do this, you are under my supervision. Like, I'm going to watch you and, you know, tell you what you have to do. But I did go once and he was very welcoming, very, you know.
So most of your training was done at Flatbacks?
Yep. I would say all of it. Yeah.
But was your dad like watching too?
He came every day.
Gotcha. Yes. Gotcha. So what kind of advice has he given you? Now that you're in the business for both of you guys, but you can start with you, Colton.
Just don't be afraid to try certain things. And then I would say the other one is just make sure you work your ass off. Like there's no, hey, you're doing great. You know, you did so well at practice today. You're doing great. Like there's none of that.
Right.
You need to get better. Here's how you get better. And it's just constant. It's constructive criticism. It's,
he's intense. I know we worked together on Tough Enough, and he was kind of the head trainer, and I was the host, and sometimes I would call him and say, we need this or do that, and like, yep, okay, I'll do it. Nope. It's like, yeah, sure, but like, there was none of that. Like, it's like, yeah, okay, this guy's got to do that, this guy's got to do this. Like, he's kind of real intense when it comes to that sort of
thing. Very intense.
You know, so, he's an intense guy to begin with, but also very goofy, too, depending on which. The two sides to Billy Gunn, right, as you guys know way better than I do, but.
Yeah. So, yeah, he just breeds that competition and trying to get better and pushing you to be better. And but yeah, just the hard work aspect, that this isn't, you know, you're not handed this. You have to keep working. We work out from 10 to 12, 10 to 1 sometimes every day. We go home, we eat, and then we go train from 5 to 9. And we rest. And that's like, that's expected. Like,
is that still now?
Yes, I still do that every day. Except when we're up here.
Well, you probably have to work even harder, both of you, but more especially you, Colton, because like you said, you have the Gun name and everyone knows 12 matches in, like you better not be coasting.
Yes. Right? I have to work even if like, yeah, we just have to work hard, even harder.
Absolutely.
Like, we have to. It's always expected or viewed sometimes as like, oh, they just got a free ride because of this. They're not even good. They just got this because of their dad. And it's like, I want to show people that is not the case.
Like, the way that I see it, it's like, it's not your fault per se that you get this opportunity, but what do you do with it? Because a lot of people would just take it for granted. Go, I got the gig. What do I care? That's not, you'll never make it.
No,
you know, you'll never make it on your own as a person, as a professional. If you had that, if you had that mindset, how about you?
I think he always told me to just have fun, just have fun when, whatever you get into, whether it's wrestling, whether it was AEW takeover on Instagram, whether it's the crowd, just have fun. And piggybacking off that point is like, as a second generation, you're going to have so many more eyes on you and they want you to fail. They want you to they're waiting for that one opportunity where you fail so they can go, ha ha, told you so. You don't deserve this. But we work our butt off. And that's why I always try to get into whatever I can do and do it the best to our ability. It's like, if I'm in the crowd, I'm going to be the loudest one out there. I'm going to be helping whoever I can to, hey, start the chants. If we do the Instagram takeover, which we just recently started doing, we're going to do everything. We're going to do pre-interviews. We're going to do like live shots of the show. We're going to do everything. And then behind the scenes, I just don't think people know how hard we work. We're just, well, ever since we got this opportunity, we've just been grinding and grinding and grinding just to make sure that those people don't have anything to say that we don't work as hard or harder.
It also kind of reflects back on your dad if you do great or if you don't.
Yes.
Yes.
And then he's not going to be happy either, right? Yeah. You have to, there's a respect level to make him look good.
Yeah. There's you have to, mom told me this the other day, but it's like you're being held accountable, or Colton's relying on you. Your dad's relying on you to make these commitments and show up to workouts and show up to training and do the best that you can do. You can't just slack off and say, oh, I'm not going to workouts today, because you have them waiting at the gym for you. So like, it's just like,
people notice too, like for me, like when I was in WCW, there's a lot of, that's like, you know, during the day for TV, you don't really do much. And most guys just sit around and I was like, I wasn't really doing anything on the show, but I wanted to, like, I got to learn something. So they used to have this big box, it was this interview box, and that's where they would, me and Gene would be with, like, you know, Sting or Arn Anderson. So I would go just hang out in the back and watch all these guys do these interviews and then learn. And then one day someone didn't show up. It's like, well, once you get that kid, him, Jericho, all right. So I'm doing interviews with Mean Gene talking about the upcoming show in, you know, Sheboygan, Wisconsin on a Saturday afternoon.
Oh, but, that's awesome.
But dude, and then the next time they gave me two, and the next time I'm on the schedule now, Jericho's got five. And I learned how to do this. And then other people that were in there, like, this guy's pretty good. You know, we should give him some promo time on the show.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how it all goes, right? Like, and the reason why I brought this up is we had the big street hockey tournament a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you were on commentary, which I didn't know how big that was going to be. But when you were doing the commentary, this guy's really good. Like,
yeah,
you could go do commentary if you had to.
Yeah.
Or whatever it may be. Who would have known that if you didn't? Like, how did you even take that gig?
Yeah, you never know. You never know what opportunity is going to. Or I knew I was going to be in front of you, and I was like, oh, man, I better not mess this up. I mean, King of Promos just killed. But. But we practice that all the time just to make each other laugh, whether it's like trying to make each other laugh doing stupid movie trailer voices.
Coming this summer, Chris Jericho in the basement.
Yeah, whatever. But like, we try to make people laugh and just do that. We're doing that constantly. And I always was told that I have a good interview voice, like, and here we go, like, whatever. So it's just like, I'm always doing that with my friends back home, and to make them laugh and to make the boys laugh. And just, it just, yeah, when I get an opportunity like that, I just want to shine, and I want to do it to the best of my ability to make everybody laugh and have a good time. So,
and we were also talking about when we started doing the Instagram mic two months ago.
So Instagram takeover is for a pay-per-view or something, and
every week
on Dynamite, every, you guys are on the Instagram Dynamite story.
We just do some stories, 15 seconds. We just interview. I think we got you on first one we did. Yeah. You said you didn't know my name, but it's okay.
I got it now.
Just kidding.
I didn't then.
But yeah, we do these 15-second little goofy interviews, and then Austin keeps the phone ringside and gets the action.
Who asked you to do that in the first place?
We actually saw Private Party do it a long time ago.
I remember
and
that.
We were like, we could do that. So we asked Jeff Jones, and we're like, hey, do you care if we do this?
Well, it'd be great exposure.
Yeah.
Once again, it's the modern version of hanging out in the box.
That's what I was about to say. We do these interviews, and we get all this, like, we're doing promos. So then when we actually get called upon to do a promo, like, we've done it.
Yeah. People could see it too, though, because, like, we did the thing that we did. That was pretty funny, good job type thing. So it builds up the, like I said, like, you mentioned one of the books I did earlier. You never know who's watching. It was one of my principles. And even with you guys in the crowd making the, I was like, these guys are great. Like, they're, the secret to longevity, Billy Gunn knows this more than anybody, is always take what you're given and make it great. Sometimes you're in the main event. Sometimes you're doing an Instagram story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're in the crowd cheering. But it all adds up. We can count on these guys, whatever we need them to do. Yes. They can do it. And that's a good place to be in.
Yeah. I think it's just show them that you can do a lot of things other than just wrestle.
Right.
Yeah. So we're good at a lot of things. I mean, when it comes to music or when it comes to just being goofy on Instagram stories or whatever it is, it's just, how can we just make this fun for the viewer?
What are some of your favorite Instagram stories that you've done on the takeovers?
Ooh, I think the funniest one is Will Hobbs. Is so Will funny. Hobbs is a good it's one. Just, I have the camera shot on him, and he's like, whatever, that Will Hobbs character. And then Will Hobbs is always in a random place far in the background, and I pan over and zoom in on his face, and he's doing his little snarl.
Yeah, I can see this face.
Yeah, or he's like
just like behind like a crate somewhere.
Yeah, just a crate, and you can only see his head.
He's always so spying, it's
like,
on you.
Yeah, or like Fuego, the tornado weather report. It's a DDT. It's just
the captain one.
Captain
is awesome.
One hit What's him the with the deal. One? It's like he's always just talking at like a random wall, and he's like, hit him with the deal, and we're like, Captain, what are you talking about? What is the deal? And he goes, if you don't know the deal, you'll never know the deal, and just walks off camera. And so like, we try to just be creative and stupid.
The last week we did, everyone just blows off the gun club. Like, we would go up to my, hey, can we get an interview? And they would either like no, man, what did, get away from here. Yeah, we just came up a little creative ways for them to get out of it, but we had like 15 people just blow us off.
But once again, though, that gives you guys A, something to do during the day, and mm-hmm. B, listen, 10,000 people watch a story, 20,000 people, 40,000 people, it all adds up,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really does.
Absolutely.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You mentioned music, and you had your EP came out. Mm-hmm. I have to get it right. The name of it is, I took a picture of it so I wouldn't forget. Of course, I'm completely forgetting it.
It's okay.
All Alone.
All Alone, yeah.
With Safe Love. And Safe Love. Safe Love.
Safe Love is my roommate that I lived with. I met him in college, and I was just at a party freestyling because that's just what I do. I've done it for therapy. I've done it at parties. It's just fun for me. It's always been fun and something I've been good at. And I was just trying to like make the boys laugh one time. I was just rapping and freestyling in the corner, and he came up and was like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just freestyling. So he called me the day after, and usually something like music is something I did on my own. It was like very personal to me. And he's like, hey, do you want to meet up and freestyle? I was like, cool. So he was really bad at first, but I just love when people at least try something.
What, meet up and freestyle, that means you play beats
on YouTube for hours and you just try to find a spark. And if you catch an idea, you run with it, you write it, you write the song, and then you move on to the next one.
Making it up for the stream of consciousness, right?
Yeah, it's just random stuff, and it's just stimulating, and it's just, it was therapy at the time. Now it became something that I could do with him and be creative, and we always talked about coming out with just an album that we could just say, like, that's ours, that's our sound, that's our stuff, that's our accomplishment, and we finally got it out. But it started with the freestyles that I released on Twitter and Instagram, and it caught fire. Like, it just, I was so overwhelmed with how well people received.
People were just reacting to
it. Yeah, and I did it out of, okay, I do music and I'm Billy Gunn's son, right? But I want to show them what I also am good at. I'm not just Billy Gunn's son. I don't want to be labeled as that. And I was like, I've been doing music since sixth grade. Wow. It was my first love. And I wrote those freestyles in 2016 and then 2017. Didn't change a single lyric. I just changed the beat to it to make it more modern. So I released those on Twitter and they're getting 950,000 impressions.
Wow.
And I'm like, wait, I might have something here to do on the side just to show them that I'm not just a wrestler and that I can just add to my resume. And it just caught fire. And then I was like, oh, wait until they hear the album, because these aren't freestyles. These are actually songs, like choruses and everything. And I just... It took us 9 months to finally take everything and put it together and finally just have something to call ours. And then I'll eventually come out with my own solo album, which is more like wrestling related and telling my story and then my side of things, the ups and downs of my life. But just having that on all the musical platforms.
No, it's
great.
I was listening to the first song is Need More.
Need More, yeah.
And it's good. Like, it's really good stuff. I always say, like, no, it's really good. No, of course it's good, or I wouldn't fucking put it out.
Yeah, he's winking at me right now.
Yeah. It's really good. I know. Like, once again, talk about having to work twice as hard to get respect. If you're a wrestler and you have the audacity to be a musician too, and if you happen to be good, well, that's even worse.
Yeah.
So you're always going to get that, but who gives a shit, right? Just do your best with it and
just
put it
do
out
it
there.
For me.
And like you said, if people are going to get into it, if it's good, they will.
Yeah.
Good music is good music.
Yes,
you know?
I think so.
How did you record it?
I went to the studio. So actually the studio I have right next to my house is Stephanie's the engineer, and Stephanie worked with me on every single song. And Safe Love introduced me to her. And Safe Love has always come out. He comes out with a lot of music, a lot of singles. And I was like, let's do something together. And she actually works with Tyler Yahweh, who is Post Malone's, one of Post Malone's artists that he brings on tour.
Okay.
I was like, this is the real deal. Like, I'm surrounded by powerful people, but I was like, how do I get this out? Like, out in the open. So, like, I've seen you, like, come out with Fozzy and stuff like that. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to send this to Chris just to see what he thinks about it. Or as a fellow musician, you're not looking for validation. You just want to share it.
Like I said, that's one thing that I appreciate about it is it's really pro-produced. Sounds great.
Yes.
Like, it sounds like, you know.
I'm a perfectionist when it comes to music.
It sounds just like listening to hip-hop radio. It would fit right in with all of that stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because you always see wrestlers sometimes try to make that conversion to music, and sometimes it's a hit or miss, but this was the first thing I fell in love with before wrestling, so I take it very seriously, and I just wanted it to be professionally done. I wanted it to look clean. So we paid a lot of money to get all this done, and as a musician, you know how much money the little things cost. It's just getting pictures or going to a site and then getting it engineered or just mixed and mastered, and right. All the things just came together, and it's cool to see the reaction of everybody over there. And like everybody, when I come to the building going, "Hey, I listened to your album." I was like, that's all I needed. Mm-hmm. I don't need it to hit top Billboard's 100. I just wanted it for me. I just wanted it to come out and just be like, you know what? I did that.
How do you get up on the different platforms?
So we go through this DistroKid. It's like a website. So we're doing it. We don't have a music manager. I don't have anything like that, but Safe Love helped me with all that stuff. And he walked me through the process, and I'm still in the process. I don't think my iTunes has like a profile picture yet, but you can still find the album. But he's just helping me still get all that stuff, because I'm very new to music and actually releasing it, but I'm not new to music and creating it. Mm-hmm. So I can create it and help it, because I've helped him with a lot of his stuff. But he helped me walk through the process of like setting up my Spotify and setting up my Apple Music and all the other things that go into it. And there's so much that goes into it, but I'm still learning as I go. Same thing as wrestling. It's just like one step at a time, and I'll get there.
You got an album coming out too, Colton?
Yeah, it's actually a country album.
You're more of a country
guy. It's called Guns a Blazin'.
It's got a couple banjo mixes in there.
There we go. So the art of freestyle, like does everything have to rhyme? Do you just look at people place? Like Cena was really good at doing that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's just me and my friend, when we were in sixth grade, he put on 50 Cent on the radio and was like, "Hey, do you want to try this?" And then I tried it and I was like, "Oh, that was fun." And then on the ride home, I played beats. And then I was like, "Whoa, it's like, I really like this." And I didn't have therapy at that time. And I was going through like down stuff with like wrestling, like dad being off the road. Right. So like, it's just, you're dealing with so much stuff. And I think the best music comes from artists that have been through it or have been through struggles or anything like that. But it's just, freestyling has always been something. If I'm on and in the mood, I can just go for hours and just not stop.
Do a freestyle right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to be ready for it.
I got to be in the environment and whatever. Yeah. But I could obviously, like, it just wouldn't be good if I just jumped into it. But if I'm in the moment, I can just go and go and go. In the music mindset, and it's just,
so you couldn't jump in on something right now.
I mean, I can just revert everything that what.
I knew you knew that was coming.
Like, he saw it from a mile away.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Slowly.
All right, I'll do the one. All right. I never rap from a fly, don't know. I can make a living off this shit in GoPro. This my promo. Ring needed Frodo, Chewy needed Solo. I got a hunch it's gonna happen. Go Quasimodo. Take a photo while I got these cameras in our faces. Dreamed about this moment since the day I tied laces. Mouth full of braces. Getting back to basics. Vision getting better, but I never needed LASIK. No handshaking. You made a point, okay, point taken. Now you the one to point, but I feel amazing. Nowadays, if I could shake your hand, I probably break it. Nowadays, I know why Kobe never left the Lakers. But who, like, I could just
that's
keep
good,
it.
Man.
Yeah, but it's
you didn't make that up on the spot, obviously.
No. That was right off the top of his head. That was good.
I see a feud with
Caster, huh?
Caster.
That's what everybody wants, but I always wanted to keep music and wrestling separate for now.
That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I didn't want to dive into that whole character, because
that was pretty good though.
Thank you.
Just as we start to wind down here, what did you guys ever have any, especially you, Austin, any thoughts about trying out with WWE? Did you ever have any of that?
So obviously the relationship with WWE and my dad has been like rocky, I guess.
Up and down.
And
yeah, because he left for a while, then came back, and then he was mad at something.
I think the only thing he told me, I was like, "What do you think about?" Because obviously this came up, and I was like, "What do you think about the Performance Center?" And he goes, "You know what? I don't want you to lose your love for wrestling that you have right now by going there, and then them having you turn into that Performance Center kind of follow directions. You need to be this instead of me being just free spoken and just express myself naturally." So it was a discussion that we had, but we tried everything to not go there.
I think the discussion was, if I remember it correctly, because it was more of like, you can go there, but you need to go do your own thing for like 2 to 3 years and find out who you are and try to develop a character yourself or feel out the landscape before you just go straight to the performance
center. Find yourself first.
And they tell you what to be, as opposed to you know kind of what you are when you go in there. And you have a little more confidence. And you.
I told Harry Smith that years ago, like it's not going anywhere. Yeah. Like, WWE's not going anywhere. You can go tomorrow or you can go 3 years from now. What's the difference? Because in that 3 years, you'll get not just the in-ring experience, life experience, like you said, seeing things differently. But, I mean, that's one thing that's great about AEW is that we really have kind of brought it back to wrestling is about you and about a character that you create, not that someone tells you what to create. And that's fine if you're there. But to me, as a young guy, it would be way better to be here.
Yeah, and I don't think we would get the opportunities to take over the Instagram. I don't think we'd have the opportunities to be in the crowd and be as obnoxious as we are. I don't think we'd get as much creative freedom as we have here because it's just, we just have to go ask somebody to take over the Instagram, and now we do it every week. So it's just, it's very easily acceptable for the things that we want to try, or at least, if we fail, we fail, but at least we get to try new things here.
Yeah,
so
and you wouldn't even acknowledge the fact that Billy Gunn's your dad if you
were
there.
Yeah.
Like Austin and Colton, you know, drink water.
Yes, exactly.
We're the drink water twins. Knife. Exactly. Yes. Well, and it's funny, too, because, you know, when you see, I think the last time, wasn't Billy on WWE TV and Hunter made some kind of a crack about AEW?
That was the Hall of Fame. We were there. We were front row.
Really?
Yeah.
So tell me, what was that all about? Was that the DX getting to the Hall of Fame?
Yes, that was
I'm
DX.
I'm surprised they let him show up.
We were too. We were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. We're here.
Okay. Well, I think the dig was DX was doing this whole thing like Vince doesn't like it when you say his name in the speeches and he forbids it, but he let DX do it or whatever. So Sean and Hunter are going, we can't say Vince's name. He'll fire us. Yeah. And my dad grabbed the mic and was like, we can't fire me.
I don't even work here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And then I think it was
that pissant little company. And then
rebuttal.
What do you guys think when you're in the front row? Like you're thinking, eesh, our chances have come
here.
Well,
we've grown up around the business. So we know what we're not looking through it through naked eyes and going, hey, what did you say about my dad? Like, no, we're not.
We're
like,
coming to get him.
Yeah. Yeah. We bum rush the ring. Just like,
it's not a piss angle.
Who are these two kids? What is going on? But we understood. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what are you going to do?
Do you guys have any favorite Billy Gunn moments that stand out for you?
I think King of the Ring I've watched 5,000 times.
Did he win? Because
that's the only thing. Yeah, 1999 King of the Ring. I think that's the only one that I remember as a kid. So that's why I think it sticks with me so long.
Who did he beat in the final?
I think it was Kane, and then it was X-Pac on the last match. Right? I don't know who he did first.
I think it might have been Ken Shamrock.
Then Kane, then X-Pac, and he came off the top with the Famouser and won. And I think that's the only thing I remember really vividly of him winning. Yeah, but that was just sweet. And then obviously him facing The Rock, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. My first, everyone remembers my debut against The Rock, the big promo in Chicago.
Yeah, we watched.
What they don't forget is at the end of the night, I think I did a run-in and helped Billy Gunn beat The Rock. Or something, because that's when Billy was feuding with The Rock.
Yes, yeah.
And that's when he was Mr. Ass.
Yeah. Mr.
Ass. And something happened where he went for a massage or something, and Rock paid the masseuse to put like...
Oh, yeah, the poison ivy leaves
on his ass.
What a ridiculous
storyline
that was.
I know, like, unbelievable.
What the...
You think about that, someone actually pitched it and went, okay.
You know what?
That's gold.
You know what? We got something here, Johnny. Let's run with it.
Talking poison ivy on his ass.
Is there something that stands out for you, Colton, the memories from your dad?
I was watching a YouTube. This isn't necessarily like a, I don't know. I was watching a YouTube clip. It was New Age Outlaws against Rock and Stone Cold, main event on Raw. Mm. And the thing I just remember is how crazy the crowd was.
Mm.
It's just when they hit their entrance and they started doing Road Dogg, ladies and gentlemen, and the whole crowd, there's a 75-year-old woman in the front row just like, oh, the world, like just going crazy. It's like the whole stadium is just, he doesn't even have to say anything and they'll just continue.
Yes.
And it was just, that really stuck out like, oh my God, like this is crazy.
Crowds have been kind of spoiled over the last 15, 20 years. They've seen so much, but you watch some of that old stuff. People are just going bananas from Steve Austin when he kicking somebody in the corner. What's that?
When Stone Cold helped mankind.
My God.
Yeah.
It's like, what
it's
is
like your
happening?
iPhone shakes when you pull it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
I was just watching the other day when I beat Hunter. It was my first big, I beat him for the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At State College, Pennsylvania. And just see the crowd reaction. Like everyone stands up. Like,
yeah.
Just like, this big explosion. It would be very hard for that to happen in this day and age. Even when people come back, it's just not the same as it was. And that was only 20 odd years ago, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
With phones, just iPhones, like they're able to go like this and like tweet about the match they're watching instead of just being fully invested.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You see that at concerts too. When you know we play live, a lot of people will be filming on their phones, and it's like, God,
they're like, I can't wait to get this up on Instagram right now to tell them, and then they're missing the moment.
Just watch the moment, you know. Yeah. Last few things. So, what are your plans now that we're starting? You guys are working together more regularly. Mm-hmm. You've been now on a pay per view. You've been on you were on Dynamite for sure.
Yes, main evented with Cody and my dad.
And what was the reason for that? Who were you working against?
We were working against Dark Order.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, because you're part of the Nightmare family now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I helped Cody take on the Dark Order. Mm-hmm. And that was just a surreal moment because it was main event. Because I came to the building and I was like, wait, when are we on? I was like, this is my debut in front of people, in front of live TV. I was like, this is going to be wild.
I think you even got the win that night, didn't you?
I did. I got the pin on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was during the break, everything coming back from the break. So it really, I just have to grow up really fast in those situations.
You have to, though.
You have to. You sink or swim. That's kind of what I've been doing the whole time I was here.
I've been here.
What was the question again?
Just planning. What do you guys want to do more of? You guys looking forward to having people back, getting more chemistry together, working together more? Because it's different here. We work once a week. It's not like it used to be where you work four times a week. So for you, for example, Cole, there's not a lot of practice time for you.
Mm. No, I'm just, excited, like what you said. Just keep working. Keep trying to get better. Keep trying to figure out what this totally is with me and him and how we can best work off of each other. And then hopefully get comfortable enough and get on Dynamite more regularly and become, that hot tag team and become tag champs. I mean, I think I speak for both of us when I say that.
Yeah,
and that's something
that
you should want if you are a tag team.
Absolutely. So, if you didn't want that, you should leave right now.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of the short term goals of what we want, but just keep getting better and show people that we are willing to do whatever and work hard. That's kind of where I'm at.
You think, Austin?
I would agree. I just want to keep having fun and living in this moment of getting to wrestle with him while he's getting started, and then having that chance for both of us to wrestle with Dad and have that moment. And then obviously when that finally comes to an end, it's just now it's time for us to take the titles. Like now it's time for us to really show people like what we're made of. Mm-hmm. But I think right now we're just we're just living in the moment of having this rare opportunity to wrestle with Dad. And just have fun on AEW Dark and just do all this, just have this creativity of going out there and making each other laugh, but also crisp, like making sure everything's crisp, learning, and just all of that right now. And then,
I was talking
when the time's right,
the other day,
let's
I think we were driving up here or something. I was just like, I don't think I've had really time to pinch myself yet.
Yeah.
Like, I was just 7 months ago starting.
So fast. It's happening so fast.
And like, I'm here and I'm wrestling every week on Dark, and just I don't know, it's crazy. It's been a roller coaster ride that I definitely don't take for granted. But
last question for you guys, and I know it's probably easier for you to choose since you've had 12 matches. What's your favorite match that you've ever had?
I've got to go either with the first one that we all had, just because it was such a surreal.
Who's
special
that against? It was just against the
Sean Maluto.
Okay, yeah, so just against the local guys.
Yep, and then the other match that I think was really special was, I've only had 12, so I can say special matches.
But, no, but to you, that's 12, yeah.
Yeah. I think when me and Austin faced Devon's sons.
Oh. Yeah, that was cool.
Because it was just, it was me and Austin's first match together. It was against more second generation stars. Yeah. And it was just,
in our head, we're just like, oh, this is
crazy.
The main event of whatever. Like,
yeah.
We were just in the zone, and it was just like, this is a special moment.
Yeah, so I would say those two are definitely.
How about you, Austin?
I think the most important match to me and biggest sink or swim moment was All In, the pay-per-view. I got the okay to do it literally, I think, 12 hours before the show. And I was just there to support Dad because we had an indie match prior to that mm-hmm. at like a local bar or something.
Where was
like,
this? In Chicago? Or
yes, in Chicago. And I think when I was in the other room, Dad texted Cody and was like, hey, what are your thoughts? And it was my fifth match ever. And I didn't have any inclination that I was doing this thing. I was just
the Battle Royal? Or
it was the Battle Royal. Yeah. And I was just in my room and Dad goes, you ready for tomorrow? And I go, yeah, I'm ready to support you. And go, I can't wait to watch the show. And he goes, no, you're in it. And I went, what? And he goes, yeah, you're in it. And my fifth match ever, I just remember walking out of the tunnel and I was like, either sink or swim. This is your moment to show everybody that what, like, you're given this rare opportunity to be in this Battle Royal and making history right now. Do the best you can and just turn it on. And I think I did. And just from there, it was just eyes were on me now. And then it was just kind of the first thing that I was just like, okay, this is what I'm meant to do. Yeah. This is just an awesome moment. I just remember looking over the crowd and I was just like, what is going on? Because I was selling in the corner and I was just like, all right, take a breath and just look. And just because you're not going to remember anything. And I looked over and John Mayer was front row.
I remember that.
And I looked over and I went, John, what's up, dude? And he goes, dude, you better win this thing. And I went, I'll do it for you. And got up and I got just hammered by Moose. But I mean, like, it was just,
it's funny. I have his number or is it his number or whether it's a DM on Instagram or something. Yeah. I was like, you were there? Why didn't you tell me? Because, well, I didn't want to bother you. Like, front dude, you're row, bothering front me. Row.
He's actually
going to say hi.
Yeah, John Mayer.
I was like shaking, and I was walking around the ring. And actually, John Mayer, when I saw him, all my nerves went, and just kind of, I just zoned in. I was like, dude, John Mayer's watching me.
That's right.
I was like, this is cool. Yeah. I was like, this is cool. Then I turned around and started having fun. And then I was like, all right, now I'm in it. But I think that's the craziest match that I've ever been a part of. And just
plenty more to come for both of you guys, man. Yes. Are you guys going to be in the crowd tonight?
Of course.
All right. Well, I'm a good guy now, so now you have to cheer for me.
I will. Well, I'll sing your song just like I do every
time. Yeah, they're still singing
top
your song.
Top of my lung. So, yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.